rise above, we're breaking through. No more lies, just me and you. Hearts aligned, we'll find the way. Together, we'll seize the day. Beyond the divide, we'll stand as one. Chasing truth till the fight is won. From the shadows to the light we strive. United we thrive. Beyond the divide.
Good morning. Welcome to Beyond the Divide. Thanks so much for joining me, guys. I hope you had a great weekend. If you live where I do, we got nearly 3 inches of rain in a 24-hour period on Saturday. So it's quite wet. I hope your houses fared well. And if they didn't, hopefully they're all dried out now and you can get back to kind of figuring out where to go from here. They say it was a 120-year storm, which is kind of funny because about a year and a half ago, we had a 100-year storm. So I think they're just, you know, extending the time period as these storms get more and more and more wet. So over the weekend, guys, I saw a video that my cousin had actually shared to Facebook. So we have these two little kids. I would say probably right around 2-ish. And so like, these are the cutest little kids ever. If you've seen this video, you know what I'm talking about. So they each have a plate, and on top of the plate is an overturned bowl. And they kind of sit there and they look at this bowl for a minute, and then they realize they can move the bowl. So they remove the bowl, and underneath the bowl on one plate, there are two cookies. And on the other plate, there's nothing. And so the little one with no cookies is like, you could totally see it on his face. He's like, what is happening? And they don't speak at all, but you can see the wheels in his little head are just spinning. And he realizes that his counterpart over there has two cookies and he has none. And he doesn't start whining or anything, but you can see the confusion on his face. And he keeps setting down his bowl and lifting it up, as if he is like willing there to be cookies underneath the bowl. And so he does this for a minute, and then you kind of start to notice the other one. And he actually looks over and he starts helping him set down and lift up his bowl. And they're like examining the plate, and you can just tell they both think this is totally crazy. Like, where are the other cookies? And then you can see it. There's a complete change in his face, and he looks at his two cookies and he realizes that he doesn't need them both, and he just gets this incredible look of peace that comes across his face. The confusion is gone, he's completely at peace, and he takes one of his cookies and he puts it on the other plate, and then they both put down their bowls to cover the cookies. And they kind of sit there for a second, and they're like looking at each other. And then they lift up the bowl, and then they both have a cookie. And they are both just so overjoyed that they finally both have a cookie. And they're laughing, and they are just so excited and so at peace with the situation. And this one hit me so deep, which is so funny because it's just these two little kids and cookies. But if you think about how the Bible calls us to the service of one another and how that works in our lives and brings us peace and brings others peace, that is what I want to dive into today. It's a topic that is both humbling and heartwarming. And if we serve one another with a joyful heart, then we can experience the peace of Jesus Christ. In a world that often shouts, me first, Jesus flips the script. He shows us that true greatness comes through humble service, not with a grumbling spirit, but with joy that overflows from a grateful heart. And if this episode blesses you and you feel so moved, I would like you to share it with a friend who could use a little bit of joy today. So I want to lay the biblical foundation for you. The Bible doesn't just command service. It doesn't just say you have to serve each other. It says serve with joy, generosity, and love. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And notice that word cheerful. It's not about duty. It's about delighting in the giving, because that is where the joy comes from. Another gem is in 1 Peter chapter 4. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. So here Peter is reminding us that our talents are not for hoarding. We talked about talents last week. They're not for hoarding, they're not for hiding. They are tools for building others up. And when we do it with joy, we're reflecting God's grace right back into the world. And the world today needs more of God's grace. In Galatians chapter 5, it says, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." Freedom isn't selfish. It's the freedom to lift others without keeping score. And finally, in Philippians chapter 2, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. And this isn't talking about drudgery. This is talking about the path to the joy that Jesus promises when we live in a serving and joyful manner. So I want you to take a minute and I want you to think of one gift that you have and how you could use it to serve someone else. I want to remind you of the story of Ruth in the Old Testament. We've spoken of Ruth before, but I wanted to circle back to her because she has one of the most joyful stories in the entire Old Testament. Her joyful service to Naomi is a very powerful example of charity and service. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine with me in the turbulent era of the judges, when Israel's heart wandered like a storm-tossed ship, famine clawed at the land of Judah, forcing families to flee like shadows into exile. Among them was Elimelech, a man from Bethlehem who escaped to Moab with his wife Naomi and their two sons. Moab was a foreign country made of jagged peaks and whispered pagan rites, and it offered a fragile shelter. But death, that uninvited thief, struck first Elimelech and then his sons after they wed local women. 10 years of fragile widowhood etched lines of sorrows on Naomi's face, leaving her and her daughters-in-law adrift in the tide of grief. Whispers of mercy arrived like a desert bloom. The famine had lifted in Judah. The Lord's bounty was spilling over the fields once more. Naomi's spirit stirred. "Return to your mother's home," she urged her daughter-in-laws. On the road back, her voice cracking like dry earth. "May the Lord grant you rest in new husband's arms." Tears blurred the horizon as the young women clung, sobbing. "No, we will follow you to your people." But Naomi, tasting bitterness like gall, pressed harder. "The Lord's hand has turned against me. Go back." Orpah, her loyalty a flickering flame, kissed Naomi and vanished into Moab's embrace. But Ruth, ah, Ruth the Moabite, her resolve forged in quiet fire, refused to yield. She dropped to her knees, gripping Naomi's robe as if it were her last tether to meaning. "Don't force me to leave you or turn back," she vowed, her words a melody of unbreakable covenant. "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I shall die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me if even death parts us. In that raw oath from Ruth chapter 1, we glimpse the spark of joyful service, not a burden, but a chosen blaze that warms the coldest exile. Naomi, silenced by such fierce love, relented, and the two widows trudged toward Bethlehem, arriving amid the golden haze of barley harvest. The townswomen gaped. Is this Naomi? She, hollowed by loss, spat back. Call me Mara, bitter one, for the Almighty has emptied me. Yet Ruth, undimmed, turned to her mother-in-law with eyes alight. Let me glean in the fields, she proposed, her voice threaded with purpose, behind whoever shows me favor. Naomi nodded, and Ruth slipped into the sun-baked rows, a foreigner bending low to gather scattered sheaves, a humble act of service that screamed defiance against despair. Providence, that sly storyteller, led her to a field owned by Boaz, a kinsman of Elimelech. Wealthy in grain and reputation, Boaz arrived like a benevolent king, blessing his harvesters. The Lord be with you. Spotting Ruth's tireless form, he learned of her devotion. The widow who abandoned homeland for Naomi's shadow. Intrigued, he called to her. Stay with my maidservants, drink from our jars, no harm will touch you. Ruth, stunned, fell prostrate. Why me, a stranger? Boaz's reply unveiled her quiet joy. All know how you've left everything for your mother-in-law. May the Lord reward you under his wings. At midday, he heaped her plate with bread and roasted grain. She ate till she was satisfied and then gleaned until dusk, threshing an ephah of barley enough to feed them for weeks. That evening, Ruth burst into their dim hut, arms laden, her face radiant despite the ache in her back. She poured out the grain at Naomi's feet. Then, and here's the joy's true glint, shared the leftovers from her own full meal. No hoarding in hardship. Her service overflowed like a spring, turning scraps into sustenance, bitterness into bread. Who claimed you today? Naomi gasped. Boaz, Ruth replied. Naomi's hope flickered. He is our Redeemer, a man of kindness to the living and the dead. Through harvest's fever, Ruth gleaned under Boaz's watchful grace, her days a rhythm of joy and toil. But Naomi, ever the strategist in sorrow's grip, hatched a bolder plan. Wash, anoint yourself, and go to the threshing floor tonight, she whispered. Uncover Boaz's feet and lie down, a plea for redemption. Ruth's response? Pure, unhesitating service. I'll do whatever you say. Under moonlit stars, amid the winnowed chaff, she approached the sleeping Boaz. He awoke, heart pounding to find her there. Spread your garment over me, she murmured, invoking ancient law. Boaz, thunderstruck by her virtue, blessed her anew. Don't fear, I'll handle it. By dawn, he loaded her with barley, ensuring she returned not empty to Naomi. At the city gate, drama unfolded like a courtroom thriller. Boaz summoned the nearer kinsmen, elders, as witnesses. Redeem Elimelech's land and Ruth with it. The men balked, sandals surrendered in defeat. Boaz claimed all, land, legacy, and love. Today, Ruth is my wife, he declared, and the elders' blessing rang like prophecy. May she build your house like Rachel and Leah. The Lord crowned their union with a son, Obed. Naomi's joy, cradled in arms once empty. Women sang praises. Your daughter-in-law, better than seven sons, renews your life. And in the grand twist, Obed fathered Jesse, who fathered David, the shepherd king whose line would birth the Messiah. From famine's jaws, Ruth's joyful service wove a tapestry of redemption. Loyalty as lavish as gold, gleaning as gospel. Proving that in serving the broken with a heart unbowed, we uncover wings of grace. Now, to the heart of our episode, the story that embodies everything that we've talked about, Jesus washing his disciples' feet in John. This isn't just a nice anecdote, it's a master class in joyful, humble service on the eve of his betrayal. So I'm going to read it to you. I'll read it slow so that you can follow along and you can picture it in your mind. It was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. And he wanted to show his disciples the love that he had for them and that he would always have for them. So the evening meal is in progress. The devil has already persuaded Judas to betray the Lord. So the deed is done. He's taken the money. The plan is all set in place. And Jesus knew that God had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and that he was returning to God. So he got up from the meal and he took off his outer clothing, so his robe, and he wrapped a towel around his waist. And he went, he poured a pitcher of water into a basin, and he took it and he knelt down in front of each of his disciples and he washed their feet and dried them with the towel that he had around his waist. And when he came to Simon Peter, Simon said, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And he replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." And Peter said, "No, you cannot wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you will have no part with me." Simon replies, "Then, Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well," because he wanted to make sure that he would never be able to be separated from the Lord. And so, he's like, "Wash my hands, wash my head, in addition to my feet, if that's what it takes." And Jesus answered Simon and said, "Those who have had a baptism need only to wash their feet, because their whole body is clean, and you are already clean." And he knew that Judas was going to betray them, so he said that one of you is not clean. And Judas knew immediately that it was him, and that Jesus knew what he had done. And when he'd finished washing their feet, he put on his robe and he returned to his place. And he asked them if they understood what he had just done. And he said, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you. Verily, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." So, just imagining this scene, the creator of the entire universe, fully aware of what lied ahead for him in the cross and death, resurrection. He chooses the lowest servant's task. Okay, washing dusty, road-worn feet. These guys walked everywhere in sandals. So I can't even imagine what their feet looked like. And Peter resists because it feels wrong for their master to be doing this, their rabbi, their teacher, their Lord and Savior. But Jesus insists because he's doing this out of love. And this is truly love in action. And he has such joy when he does this. He doesn't sigh, he doesn't complain. He serves them with a purposeful love to the very end. He knows that this is it for him. When the meal is over, he goes to the garden to pray and he is betrayed there. He's arrested there and he knows that once he gets arrested, that he will never come back in this form, in this life. And it wasn't just symbolic of spiritual cleansing. This was a lived out command. As Jesus says in verse 15, I have set you an example. When we serve like this with joy and not obligation, we're blessed. And it's a blessing of contagious joy. And it's the kind that turns ordinary moments into holy moments. So, how can we live this out in our everyday lives? How can we apply this as a practical occasion of service for us and do it with a smile on our face? So, first in family life, think of Proverbs chapter 17. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. We, as a family, we had the opportunity to go elk hunting over the weekend. And I have to tell you guys, this is not an easy task. The elk remain very, very high in our mountains. We're talking like over 10,000 feet, and you have to hike most of it. And you've got your pack and your gun and all your orange, and it's exhausting, and all this stuff is heavy. And I haven't done it in a long time. It's probably been like 18 years ago was the last time that I made this hike. But my husband does it frequently. And as our children have grown to the age where they could hunt, he's taken them with him and he's been a teacher and a guide for them. And to me, this is one of the most selfless acts of love and service that can be done, passing on your wisdom to your children. He teaches them everything that he knows. He teaches them about cars and work ethic and hunting and art. He teaches them about the land and how to grow things. And like seriously, everything he knows, he teaches our children. And he does this even when he doesn't particularly want to. He wasn't planning on going hunting this year, but our daughter really wanted to go, and so he took her. And he does it when he's tired, and he does it when it would be easier to just do it himself. He has the most giving and serving heart of anyone I know, and he does it with joy and love. And he is a huge example of applying this principle in your daily life. Matthew chapter 20 reminds us that just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So the next time you see someone who needs help, if it's a woman who is carrying a million bags and pushing a stroller, and she just needs that door opened for her, or an elderly neighbor who has a trunk full of groceries that could use help getting them in the house. It can be these little tiny things. Our service doesn't have to be these huge, grand acts. It can be these teeny tiny little things. And when we do this, we honor others above ourselves, just like we are taught in the scriptures. And in 1 Peter, Peter tells us that we are stewards of gifts for others. Some of our most powerful spiritual gifts are not even meant for us. We are the funnel to steward those gifts so that we can bless the lives of others. That's part of why we're put here. That's part of this grand experiment on this earth, is that we can get beyond ourselves and serve others. That we can take the example that Jesus Christ left for us and we can apply it to our lives, because that is what being godly is interpreted as. Serving with a joyful heart is not about perfection. It's simply about following the example of Jesus Christ. One foot wash at a time. I want you guys to think about John 13. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Let us be doers Let us pray that the Lord will open our hearts to his example of joyful service. Help us to see the opportunities to love and to serve one another, and that we can also be humble and accepting of those who would provide service for us. Because that's huge. We are so conditioned in this world to just be okay and to handle everything ourselves. And it's hard to let other people do things for us. It's even hard when you have a baby and you feel like crap and your neighbor wants to bring you dinner. It is even hard to allow them to do that because it, in our minds, we feel like we have failed if we allow other people to provide service for us. And so just as much as we need to be serving with joyful hearts, we need to be receiving with joyful hearts. Because if we're not receiving with joyful hearts, then we are denying someone else the opportunity to serve with a joyful heart. And we need to remember that our service doesn't always have to be recognized. It can be done in secret, and it can be something that people might not even think about. But you will know. You will know that you did it. You will know that you did it with a joyful heart, and that it blessed the lives of others, even if they don't realize it. There are so many little things that happen that we don't even think about because we don't have to think about it. Because someone else has got this. And if you do it with a joyful and loving and giving heart, then it blesses you and it blesses others at the same time. It's a beautiful day, guys. I want you to go out and find an opportunity to serve with a joyful heart. Try to get beyond your family. I know it's so easy when it's right in your own home. But really try to get out there and find a common thread with somebody. Expound on that. Figure out how you can serve others. Figure out how to do it joyfully, lovingly, and pray to Jesus, because he will open those doors for you and provide you those opportunities. Have a great day, guys. Thanks so much for joining me.